What is up, you freaks, degenerates, circus clowns, and farm animals? It is great to have you here on the QTR podcast. In case you can't tell from that introduction, this is a finance podcast. It's just a little bit different, so make sure you sit down and strap yourselves in. First and foremost, make sure you're abiding by a little something that I like to call the two-drink minimum. Folks, when I sat down to draw up the business plan for this podcast, that was the first thing that went on line one of that piece of loose leaf paper that I was writing on. Well, actually, it may have been a cocktail napkin. Actually, the point of the matter is, I didn't really put down a business plan when I started the podcast. I kind of just started ranting into a microphone, and I may have been intoxicated at the time, but the point of the matter is that I decided at some point I wanted to have a two-drink minimum, and I need you guys to abide by that, all right? You're on the honor system, folks. Don't disappoint me. I won't be mad. I'll just be disappointed. The second thing you need to know is that I am not a financial advisor. I don't give financial advice. Nothing on this podcast is financial advice. You should consult your regular financial advisor. You can find him somewhere in a shopping mini mall center at an Edward Jones office. Generally, he'll be wearing some type of bow tie, or if he's a younger gentleman, maybe a junior broker, somebody of that ilk. You will be able to recognize them by the shirt-tie Izod combination that they purchased from Kohl's recently. It will have the square fold lines still in the shirt from when it was in the package. So when you see that, you know you've got a guy that can give you some great advice on ETFs. Third, I want to shout out my patrons. For those of you that are new to the podcast, this podcast exists only because I have kind gentlemen and women and everything else, whatever people would like to be called, that donate to my Patreon account. Patreon is a service where you can donate a small recurring sum to the podcast. And if it's okay with you, and trust me, it's going to be because I'm in charge here and I only do what I want. But if it's okay with you, I'm going to shout out a couple of my patrons to get things rolling here. First and foremost, my friends over at Quantamize.com, Quantamize. Somebody just Twittered me the other day, said they had checked out Quantamize. They loved the platform. I guess had put them on a good options trade or whatever. So glad that our little love here between the QTR podcast and the Quantamize guys is paying off a little bit. Go check them out. They're using AI and factor research, helping with individual investors discover their next big investment. And in February, they were up over 5%, at least when they gave me this script that hasn't been updated yet. The Quantamize platform was recently called the number one alternative to a Bloomberg terminal by Benzinga. That's the only fucking thing you need to know, folks. You don't feel like spending $25,000 a year on a Bloomberg terminal? Shoot on over to Quantamize.com. Have a beer with those guys. Have a chat with them. Link is in the podcast profile. Also, my brother Jake over at the Behind the Bid podcast is coming through huge on Patreon. Appreciate him. Behind the Bid's a daily pre-market YouTube show. They cover about 8 tickers every morning. And the best thing about this, the thing that I like the most about it, is they do it quick. They spend about 1 minute per ticker. So in about 10 minutes, you get a little rapid fire analysis to start your day before you sit down at your desk and begin pouring scotch into your coffee, which probably happens somewhere around 9:29 a.m. if I'm guessing correctly and judging you by, well, really how I do business. All right, with that being said, I also want to shout out my friend over at Corvus Gold. I want to shout out my buddy Nathan Michaud over at Investors Underground, which is a great day trading platform that has a couple of chat rooms, and I know a couple of guys that are over there on the regular. They're sharp fucking dudes. I also want to shout out real quick guys like Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, my brother Russ Valenti, Piggly Wiggly, fine purveyor of rare yam trees, my brother Nathan Weiss, Andre Gagnon, Mike Matt Merle, Chris Sharkey, David, Jesse Collins. You guys all keep the podcast going in a big way. I appreciate the shit out of you. And also, last but not least, if you're waiting to hear your little shout, you little narcissists, you donated because you want to hear your name and you're a new patron. Here's the spot where I'm going to shout you out right here. My brother Jack is in the house. My brother Will Dog just re-upped. I appreciate. My friend Jesse Stroik is in the house. David Hansen just said what's up today. 46 and 2-ish. I'm guessing that's a reference to New York City address, but you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. Just signed on over the last couple of days. My buddy Eric Schmidt is in the house. My friend Wednesday, 8 p.m. is in the house. Mike Hanlon showed up a couple of days ago again, which I appreciate. J. Alexander Sinclair is representing. My homeboy Clay Kelly is in the house. How about Lewis Chang? What's going on, Lewis Chang? Craig Dosher, Paul Marcotte, Stephen Binder, all recent patrons in the house. I appreciate you guys. And last but not least, before we get started with motherfucking Mark Spiegel, let me just shout out a couple guys that have been with me for a while. Trinker, what's going on, brother? I recognize you. Signed up on Christmas 2018 and still with me. I appreciate that. Jen Ross, I always see you on social media. You're out there. I appreciate you too. My friend Dave, my friend Grant Garden have been on for a while. How about Jesse Collins? How about Colin Turner? How about James Tombor and Matteo Muccinoni still with me since October? Joseph Farber is in the house. How about Juan Uribe? What's up, Juan? He's been down since September. Matt Pilon's been down since August of last year. Going way the fuck back. The one, the only, Max motherfucking Mulvihill, oldest patron I've got on the list. All right. Before we get started, literally I need another 15 seconds. I know this shit is unbearable, folks, but I do want to say one more thing. My homies Harry G and Greg A also showed up in a big way to donate, not through Patreon, but to donate through, I think, PayPal or Venmo. So I wanted to make sure that they got a shout out. And also my friend, where the fuck is he? Brian Adler just checked in through PayPal, and I appreciate that. And I just want to make sure I'm not missing anybody. Folks, I know it's tiring to listen to this stuff at the beginning of the podcast. You just want your content. But you know what? A lot of people have been helping me out, like Don P. And I'm not saying any last names. I can't remember who I'm allowed to say and who I'm not allowed to say. But the point is, if you're giving me money, you're on my fucking good list. All right. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with the one, the only foul-mouthed Mark Spiegel from Stanfill Capital. Also a good investor, in my opinion, but most well-known for your foul mouth, I think, Mark. And that's okay, yeah, by the way.
Yeah,
I am
unlike
also.
You.
What's going on, buddy? Tell me, let's talk about what you were just talking about.
Well, you know, as we are recording this, the story broke that Kimball Musk resigned from the board of Chipotle, and it appears that both Elon Musk's and Kimball Musk's name are off of the Tesla website listing the various committees that the board is on. So it's I don't know, it seems as if, you know, it doesn't seem like a coincidence that Kimball would be resigning and his from Chipotle and the name would disappear from Tesla. Maybe something's up. Maybe those two criminals are finally out of there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to find information on it right now as we're talking. But what I see here on Twitter is that, where the fuck is it? This guy, Elmer Fudd, who is a...
Plug-in Fudd, at Plug-in Fudd. He's the best.
Yeah, he is.
He's great.
At Plug-in Fudd writes, here's what he writes. Steve Jurvetson and both Musks removed from Tesla board of directors website. Unconfirmed scoop, Elon Musk and Kimball Musk are no longer on the board. Well, that's a... They're taking off the website, so we'll have
Wait,
to see.
Wait, there's a new tweet here.
What does
it
say?
It says, hearing Elon removed from Tesla website, BOD list... that's you.
That's me,
sorry.
Dildo. I just...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, and my buddy Jim Tilton here actually just replied and actually said he's still there, so I'm going to... I'm going to take a look here for myself, actually, and let's just have a look here. We're going to go to IR. We're going to do a little Tesla due diligence here on the fly. Let's see. Corporate governance. Where would it be? Where the fuck would it be? Contact the board of directors. It does still list his name and Kimball's name on the regular site where it says board of directors, but it does not list it, I think, under the... Committee composition, right.
Yep, that's correct.
So let me just clarify that real quick on Twitter for the people that are watching, and then I want to give you my undivided attention because we have so much shit to talk about, my fucking head's going to spin. Listed on main board site, but not on committee composition page. Both Musks. Okay, this tweet put out mid-podcast with Mark Spiegel, so sorry about the disturbance in the podcast. Good. Well, hopefully
I hope you're going to edit this shit out.
I'm not. You know why? Because I don't have fucking time to edit it. You know, like, I just don't have time for that shit. I don't. And you know, I pride myself on not trying to fucking like filter myself or anything like that. Right, exactly. So anyways. All right, so let's talk before we get any confirmation on that, which we haven't gotten, let's talk about Jesus Christ. What do you want to talk about? Well, we got the Model Y unveil tonight. You want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very speculative, you know, as far as what's going on. I mean, you know, we know 70% of the parts are common. We know that there's no fleet of those things driving around for a year being tested because people would have snapped spy shots, and that's an absolutely necessary prerequisite for any legitimate car company, which, of course, Tesla isn't, you know, before producing a model. We know that – well, we know that they claim they don't even know where they're going to build it for sure, that they're leading towards Nevada. We know – you know, from sources, you know, reliable sources, let's say on Twitter, that they haven't even, you know, started to order the tooling for it yet. So, you know, you put all that together and the best possible case to have that thing in production would be 18 months from now, which of course would be what, like sort of late 2020, basically.
Right.
And by late 2020, you know, we're going to be well into the Mercedes EQC. And I think that's when the small Audi SUV comes out, and you know, it's questionable how much bigger the market is for that vehicle versus just Model 3 buyers who say, oh, let's get that one instead or whatever. I mean, you know, one thing we could talk about, I talked about this today on Twitter, and Whitney Tilson talked about it.
Somebody just posted Elon Musk steps down as CEO, but I don't know if it's true. Hang in there.
Okay.
They're saying it's on Bloomberg right now. Hold on. Let's see. I don't know if this guy faked this or what.
Yeah, I don't see it in the stock.
I think it's fake.
Stock is only off $2 from the close. I think the stock would be off about $22 from the close.
Or up $22 with this stock. Okay, so go back to the Model Y. I'm sorry. You know, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to suggest that they're doing the unveil tonight, you know, to kind of couch other news, right?
Well, of course. Yeah, of course. And listen, I mean, you know, the chief engineer of the freaking Model 3 literally quit like the day after or the week that Musk announced this thing, which tells you it was like a bullshit rush job and the thing's not ready. And he was like, hey, I've had enough of your bullshit, Elon. I'm walking. And he quit on no notice. And, you know, you saw that post, I assume. So, you know, look, we normally spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the Audi's coming out, the Mercedes, this is coming out. Let's talk about the big picture, which is sort of the total addressable market. And it's something I've been thinking about. And Whitney Tilson had a great letter about this the other day. And other people have been starting to talk about it, which is, you know, Tesla fans, and for that matter, every car maker in the world may be way overestimating, you know, the realistic market for electric cars that have these limited ranges and cost, you know, $15,000 or $10,000 more than a comparable non-electric car. And, you know, we could wind up with a massive capacity glut from everybody, which was brought on by Elon Musk, you know, hyping his stock and hyping the demand for this thing when I've said for a long time, you know, the Tesla market seems to be, you know, I call it an inch wide and a mile deep.
Right.
You know, you have these people who are on their third or fourth Tesla. They've either crashed the first two or they just, you know, they want one of each model. And, you know, maybe it's not spreading that broadly. I mean, as you know, Model 3 sales absolutely died when the tax credit was halved in the U.S. in January and February. There appears to be not much backlog in Europe beyond the initial estimate of 20,000 or so. And, you know, it could just be that not only did, as I said on Twitter today, I mean, Musk may have not only incinerated, you know, billions of dollars of his investors' capital, he may have incinerated, you know, tens of billions of dollars of other auto companies' capital because they saw what was going on with Tesla and they're like, oh my God, we got to be there.
Right.
You know, it's actually an interesting phenomenon because a lot of it was their shareholders saying, hey, why are you guys selling at 6x earnings? And, you know, Tesla is selling it an infinite multiple of no earnings, you know, and they're like, we want some of that action. And, you know, that's real pressure. And, you know, when Daimler sees that or VW or whatever, they're like, yeah, we should get, you know, GM, whatever. So the whole thing could be just, you know, an emperor with no clothes, you know. I mean, look, if you incentivize people enough or penalize them enough, you know, on a gas car, they'll do it. I mean, EVs are huge in Norway because it's like half the price, because you know, you pay the entire price of the car or something like that in taxes if you don't buy an electric car. But short of jamming them down people's throats, and I've driven electric cars, and you know, I understand the appeal, but they're not ready for prime time because of the cost issues, the range issues, you know, those two things, the weight issues maybe. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, are we going to wind up? I mean, by the way, this is terrible for Tesla. I mean, Tesla's going to have problems, obviously, no matter what. But if it turns out there's this capacity glut coming out, I mean, they're really screwed, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's the case. I mean, we're going to find out, obviously, when we get the Q1 numbers. But, you know, we're definitely. So just so you know, the Kimball Musk leaving Chipotle has been confirmed, right? So that crossed the
line. Oh, yeah, no, that's a real headline. I saw that. By the way,
what was Kimball Musk doing on the board of Chipotle to begin with? Is probably the first question that I would ask.
You know, I don't know if he's qualified to do anything but stuff burritos. And frankly, I wonder if he's even qualified for that. You know, maybe he's planting seeds in the garden.
Well, he doesn't seem to fucking understand what the job of a director is on a board. When he took that Stuart Varney interview, okay, first and foremost, this guy has to understand that he has a fiduciary obligation to Tesla shareholders to, you know, make sure that the governance of the company is upheld and make sure that management's doing what's in the best interest of shareholders. And to go on that Varney and Company interview that he did a couple months back when in the midst of chaos at Tesla, and to have Stuart Varney ask him, you know, legitimate questions about what was going on with his brother. I mean, his brother's the fucking CEO of the company, right? He's on the board of directors. It's a $50 or $60 billion public company at the time. And to go on there and just duck the questions, but not only to say, you know, it's not like he went on Mark and he said something like, well, I don't really have a comment. You know, the board's looking at it, but we don't really have a statement that we want to make right now, or, you know, it's something I'm looking into. He just ducked the question with this, you know, like, oh, I really want to talk about Plant to Seed Day. I really want to talk about Plant to Seed Day.
Do you remember the movie Being There? You won't remember it, but have you ever seen it? It was from 1979. It was with,
no.
Peter Sellers played this character. It's, by the way, it's an 8-star movie on IMDb. I just checked.
I wasn't even fucking born yet, and neither was Tesla's CEO. All right, keep going. Or CFO, CFO rather.
Yeah. So you know, Peter Sellers plays this character named Chauncey Gardner, and his name was Chauncey. And he was a gardener, and he was a complete and total moron. But he would say these like really simple-minded things. It was written by a guy named Jerzy Kosinski, who was a brilliant writer, and Hal Ashby made it, who was just a great fucking director, Hal Ashby. Anyway, he would say these absolutely simplistic, you know, moronic things, and everybody would interpret them as great wisdom. So, you know, all the, you know, whatever, leaders of the world are gathered around him to hear his latest wisdom. This is like Kimball. Kimball is this absolute simple-minded gardener, except that he doesn't have any wisdom. Just what he says is just stupid.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't seem, and it goes really with my contention about the entire company. I mean, it just doesn't seem like anybody is serious there. It doesn't, like, when Dane Butt-Swink is signed on, you know, I said to Montana Skeptic, all right, good. Like, it looks like, you know, it looks like somebody is there with some brains. It looks like somebody's there with some pedigree. It looks like somebody's there that's a professional.
Oh, somebody got the fuck out of there in no time.
Somebody that can clean up the place, yeah. And then he just turns around and leaves.
Right, as did the CAO they brought in, obviously, last year, who lasted a month, but he didn't even last a month. Supposedly he was looking for a job within a week. So, look, all they do now is promote from within, right?
Right.
Because who the fuck is going to come in there? And, you know, this is an interesting point. I mean, you know, if Musk is off the board, you know, it's interesting because then, you know, maybe they do bring in an outside CEO. I mean, no good outside CEO would come in with Musk on the board, you know, or even involved at all, I think, because you're going to have questions about chain of command, and Musk is not going to be able to keep his fingers out of the pie. Right.
Right.
So they could bring in a real CEO now, if the Musk brothers are absolutely gone from the whole situation. But the problem with that is a real CEO would, like, immediately throw this company into restructuring and you know, drastically curtail its ambitions.
Well, and this goes back to, like, my argument that the people that are running the show don't really understand what it means to be a public company to begin with. I mean, I've said on this podcast number of times by myself in podcasts that I've done talking about Elon Musk that he gives me the impression of somebody that everybody says, oh, he's playing by his own rules. He's a visionary. He, you know, wants to, you know, redefine what it means to be a public company or whatever. And I just think he just doesn't know. I don't think he understands what being the CEO of a public company entails. I don't think he understands.
No. Yeah, listen, I mean, I don't think he's half as smart as he think he is, as he thinks he is, but he's not that stupid. I think he knows. He just doesn't give a flying fuck. I think he's a sociopath who will do whatever the hell he wants, you know, until he's prevented from doing it, you know? And if you try to prevent him, he'll try to worm his way around that because he thinks he's so smart. But look, these guys always go down in the end. And, you know, Musk is going to be no exception to that. He's been scheming probably his whole life, you know. Look, I don't endorse bullying. I think bullying is horrible. But, you know, he was beaten up every day after school. And in some ways, I understand what happened here. I doubt he changed from when he was, you know, 16 to when he was 47. I doubt he changed.
I don't know. You know what always struck me as weird was when he ordered that McLaren F1 after
he had insurance. He wrecked it with no insurance.
He sold PayPal and then he had the fucking thing delivered and he had CNN at his house taping
him. Well, he's always been a total attention grabber. Obviously, I mean, look, we both know that he sued retroactively to claim credit for founding Tesla when he didn't, and one of the reasons he wanted that, you know, throughout the other guys was they were getting more credit than he was for stuff. And, you know, look, he's a sick individual.
He's technically co-founder, right? I saw he wrote in one of the legal documents that was filed.
I think
filed,
he sued
right?
for that. He sued for that. You know, but he came in well after it was founded and financed it. Look, it should be enough for him to say, hey, I saw the potential here. I didn't co-found it, but I financed it and, you know, I took over and got it bigger and whatever. That's fine. That's all true. But, you know, whatever. Anyway.
What do you think the timeline looks like between tonight's Model Y reveal and A, them taking deposits on it, and B, when they actually produce it? In terms of what they need, you know, from a production line, I know they're going to use a lot of the same parts as the Model 3, but what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, as I said, you know, for any legitimate car maker, which Tesla isn't, but if they don't adhere to this timeline, then they'll just wind up with another shit show with huge warranty costs, as they do on the Model 3, which, by the way, they don't acknowledge in their reserve, which is another scam they're pulling. But the best case would be 18 months from now. I mean, they have to test these things for a year, and they got to tool up an assembly line. And one guy is very good, Bertel Schmidt, who's on Twitter a lot, who co-runs that site, the Daily Kanban, with Ed Niedermeyer. You know, Bertel said he's checked with people, and they can't build despite the parts, the commonality, you know, they can't build the Model Y on the Model 3 line. It's like a height limitation, you know, because the Model Y is going to be taller, you know. So, you know, look, I don't know that this Model Y is, you know, going to necessarily be all that successful. I mean, if it's got the same width as the Model 3, it might just look sort of tall and geeky. Or, you know, maybe it will. I mean, in theory, it should outsell the Model 3, but it'll steal sales from the Model 3.
Right.
You know, it goes back to what I said at the beginning. I mean, there's no way these guys are going to sell anywhere near as many cars as the bulls think they will. And even to sell more than they sell now, they need billions of dollars in CapEx, which they haven't budgeted for. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting. I'll tell you right now, if Elon is completely gone from this company, which would sort of, if this thing about him being off the board is right, and we don't know what it is, right?
We don't know that
it is. It's just a website thing, right?
I mean, it could just be them updating the website.
Right. But if he's off the board, like if he's just completely gone, this stock will instantly collapse, because then it's just a money losing, shitty car company, you know, a busted growth story.
But do you think the market realizes that him being on the board and, you know, here's what my argument would be, like my devil's advocate argument against that would be that, look, Musk, in my opinion, is clearly calling all the shots at the company, whether he's on the board or he's CEO or he's, you know, on the payroll as fucking food service manager, right? Like the dude in Casino. So what is the difference if he's officially taken off the board or if he's officially taken out as CEO, but he still works there as,
well,
you know, head,
okay,
head of janitorial relations? He's he's still going to be calling the shots. And if what we're arguing, which is that there's an environment of him pulling the strings from, you know, even though if he's already got fucking control of the board and board majority without having the majority by himself, what's to stop him from continuing to insist that the board drive this thing into the brick wall that you and I think that it's heading into?
Well, you're right. So, you know, my assumption, assuming any of this is true, and to, again, we don't know it is that if he were off the board, he would be completely out of the company. I mean, I can't imagine, I could be wrong. I couldn't imagine him being a over 20% holder, stockholder in this company and not retaining at least a board seat. However, it's possible that as part of an SEC settlement, you know, which we all know this thing is ongoing,
right,
it's possible the SEC could have said, hey, you're not only you're not a CEO, but you're off the board and that's it. And now he becomes the chief product officer.
Right. And that's
and
what
would happen. By the way, it's possible because, you know, he's still been on this afternoon sort of tweeting about software updates and the Model Y and whatever. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem that he cleared out his desk there, right? So if he stays at Tesla as sort of the chief product officer, you know, a position that's not on the board,
non-DNO position, right?
And not
what
a C-suite.
What it would be, you know, would be a 5-year officer director bar from the SEC, I'm sure.
Okay, fine. So if that's the case, then this company is really fucked because, I mean, it's really fucked because clearly there's going to be two chains of commands there. You know, there will be, you know, whoever the ostensible seat, which, by the way, if this happens, it seems pretty clear that the new quote unquote CEO would be Jerome Gehlin, who, however you pronounce his name, who runs automotive now anyway. And, you know, that idiot Gerber was on TV saying, on Twitter saying, oh, I met with Jerome Gehlin and the company's in good hands. And that idiot from Bailey Gifford, Anderson, was like, you know, I'm fine with Musk stepping down.
I saw that. Yep.
Yeah. So, and if Musk is there, there is no competent outsider who will come into this company. So what you're going to have is Jerome Guillaume, whatever his name is, who is the same guy who's been running this fucked up operation anyway. I mean, he's been the guy. So everything you see fucked up is under his watch, you know, I guess maybe supervised by Musk. And then Musk, who's going to be doing what he's been doing. So, you know, and by the way, it becomes interesting at that point because, you know, what does the SEC say if Musk is really running the company, even though he doesn't have the title? I mean, that is the kind of thing Musk would try to pull off. But now, question you're going to ask is, or you might want to ask is, okay, what happens to the stock if Tesla comes out and say, hey, we're going to let Elon do what he does best. We're going to make him our chief product architect.
I mean, the stock could go up on that.
No, I don't think it goes up, but I don't think it immediately plunges. I think, and by the way, I'm not talking $15 in either direction, okay? I'm talking like a $100 move. I don't think it happens right away in either direction. I think what would happen there is people would think, huh, okay, well, let's see how this works out, you know? By the way, if that announcement came out when the market was open or even when it was in the aftermarket, I mean, you know, the Bloomberg headline would get picked up and, you know, the stock might plunge $50. But
right,
putting that aside, I mean, assuming they announce this tonight, let's say at the Model Y, I think the stock sort of stays in a fairly limited range and people think, oh, this is interesting. You know, let's see if this could work. And of course, it can't work. It doesn't solve any of the terrible financial manufacturing problems, you know, competitive problems, all that stuff. It doesn't solve demand problems. It doesn't solve any of that. And it essentially leaves the same people in charge who are in charge now. And it'll fuck things up even worse, as I said, because, Jerome will give an order. And then Musk will give a different order.
Yeah, and you know what? I have a little bit of experience because I used to work for an alternative energy company, and the CEO did have to accept a 5-year officer director bar because he didn't want to fight the SEC on some allegations about misstatement of an asset that occurred like very, very early in the company's inception. But regardless, he consented to a 5-year officer director bar and was made chief of technology at the company, which is a non, you know, not chief technology officer, chief of technology. So
yeah, very similar.
Right,
yeah.
A non-officer position, which is something that Musk could do. And as a result of a subsequent financing, a newer team of, you know, a new CEO and a new chief operating officer came in. And, you know, to say that they had different styles and that they were at odds with one another would be an understatement. And I've often said that I think that if this happens to Musk, a guy who's used to being in charge, especially if somebody comes in with their chest puffed out at the CEO position and realizes either thinks to themselves, look, like, I have to make a change here, or realizes now I'm on the fucking hook for this, right? So every time Musk fucks up, people are going to be looking at CEO Jerome Guillen or whoever the fuck it is and saying, hey, like, why are you allowing this to happen at the company? Similar to the way people have been looking at the board over the last 2 years, kind of like, what the hell are you guys doing, right? So that, I think, is a fertile kind of ground for a conflict between Musk and then the people who on paper are technically running the company to kind of gestate, right?
Like, well, look, I mean, it would be bad enough if they brought in a really good guy to be CEO and Musk was still there. I mean, if they brought – obviously, he's not going to come out of retirement. But, you know, if they brought in like an Alan Mulally type, you know, somebody who they were hoping
– I like Alan Mulally. I would love to see that.
No, but wait. But let me make my point.
Go ahead.
I mean, it would be bad enough if they brought him in and Musk was still hanging out, right? But an Alan Mulally or someone at his level would never come in if Musk were still there. And if Musk completely left – and an Alan Mulally type came in, and I'm not saying he would ever do it, but, you know, somebody came in, he would immediately put this company into restructuring, or at the very least, way, way damp down Musk's bullshit and say, look, we're not going to have the Model Y out that fast. We're not going to sell 600,000 cars a year next year, you know, whatever the bullshit Musk pulls out. You know, this year he said whatever, 400, 500, whatever. You know, he would, and the stock would collapse then. People would say, oh, okay, the company's in good hands, but now it's just a car company. Now that we're learning the truth, right? So there's no good outcome here. The only good outcome is, I mean, for the stock price, the only good outcome is, you know, Musk goes completely, a competent guy comes in, he drastically pulls everything back, and you have a $35 stock, right? That's like the best outcome, right? Or the guy comes in and says, this is ridiculous. We have a $20 billion, whatever it is, dollar commitment to buy batteries from Panasonic. You know, we have – you know, whatever, $10 billion in debt on top of that, whatever, we have all this. I'm just restructuring this thing. And we're throwing it into 11, and we'll start again, and we'll franchise out the dealerships. I mean, that's what
it's difficult. It's difficult to see, like, a seasoned executive like a Mulally come in. I mean, the only problem he might have is communicating with the board, right? If the board of directors isn't looking at the company's balance sheet in the way that the business is going right now and determining amongst themselves that maybe it's time to at least bring in somebody to consider the idea of restructuring, which I don't know, maybe they've done. But if it hasn't occurred to them to do that at this point, I'm not sure that an Alan Mulally coming in and saying that would do something. But what I would be sure of is that if you brought in a seasoned executive, I don't know if that would be the first thing on their list, but I would tell you that that idea, the idea of considering it, would probably likely get a lot more credence than it's getting right now at Tesla headquarters. This is all right. Just my opinion and a guess. But if I had to guess, I would say Musk is kind of walking around telling people, we will not go bankrupt by any means necessary. You know, one of these visionaries that just says, well, I don't care how you fix it. Just fix it. Just fucking make it happen. You know,
and that guy, whoever that guy is, a Mulally caliber guy, isn't coming in under those circumstances.
Correct.
It's not going to happen.
Yep.
So you'll get some schnook, or more likely, you'll promote, as they've been doing with everything else, a schnook from within the company, which in this case would be Jerome Guillen, whatever his name is, who did have some – he did have automotive experience before coming to Tesla, but Tesla's a shit show. And Guillen's the number two guy, essentially. So, you know, and he would still be the number two guy, whatever title Musk had or didn't have. So nothing would change under those circumstances. And, you know, there are people who allege that, you know, Guillen has been in charge when they've been trying to sell – you know, used, you know, lemons as new cars, you know, return cars, saying that they've never been owned or whatever. You know, I mean, there's a lot of evidence for that, but it's not proven. So I'm not saying he did it. But at any rate, it's no change except when Musk joked, I don't know, 6 months ago when he said, I'm going to make myself the nothing of Tesla. You know, and maybe he's making something, but he's still going to be there, and it's a shit show. And now,
well,
I'm happy being
short
in those circumstances.
You got to just think about it from the SEC standpoint too, right? So you have this arguably, I've said, the worst type of fraud you can perpetrate as a public company, which is making up a buyout offer out of nowhere, okay? Like,
That's pretty good.
Well, really, man, you can't convince me that, you know, Mark, it's difficult for me to envision a circumstance where a $60 billion public company chief executive officer
wasn't fired the next day.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah, and you could have said the same after he called that guy a pedophile. You could have said the same after numerous stupid things that he's done. But the fact that he wasn't fired by the board and then was still allowed to kind of just pay a fine and go on his way with the SEC.
This would never happen. Listen, any CEO would have been fired by the board the day after the pedo guy tweet.
Of course, I said that many times.
At least he would have been having to, or at least they would have made him take a leave of absence to get his head together. Right.
Could you imagine this if that was Mary Barra or fucking Satya Nadella? He would be out. It would be sensitivity training. It would be all this shit. He would have did a public apology. But here's my point. My point is the SEC came out. They gave their kind of like one, hey, we'll let you slide. In my opinion, that's what it appeared after that. And said, look, you're going to pay a fine. We're going to make your tweets be monitored by a general counsel so as to ensure that your disclosures going to your 24 million Twitter followers that instantly become headlines at news organizations are accurate, right? So they gave them kind of, in my opinion, what looked like a sweetheart deal. But I also understand that the SEC's hands are tied to some degree, that they don't have the personnel or the resources necessary to combat a guy that's worth $22 billion and is, in my opinion, erroneously held by many people across the country to be the second coming of Jesus. But now he has come out and now publicly kind of shit on that first chance that they gave him and said, hey, I think he even admitted too, hey, I didn't have this pre-approved. And then in their response, they said something like, well, Elon's allowed to, you know, at his discretion, tweet first and then have the lawyers consult as to whether or not it's material after, which flies directly in the face of what the SEC was making this order for. So if you're the SEC, what is your breaking point? And then what is the next step become? And for me, to be honest with you, this is a public spit in the face of the SEC, even after he said I do not respect them on 60 Minutes. And I think a five-year officer or director bar, which should have happened probably in the first place, has to be on the table now. It has to be. Otherwise, we don't have financial market regulation, right?
No, I agree completely. And it would absolutely be Musk, you know, who's a total wise guy and thinks he's like the smartest guy in the room. And by the way, you know, he may be. We've had this discussion before. I think you and I have. I'm sure he's got 10, 15 IQ points on me. That's fine. But you don't have to have his IQ, whatever it is, in order to see how transparent his bullshit is, right? That's his big mistake. You know, Munger alludes to that in other ways, you know, when he says, you know, there's nothing worse than a guy with a 130 IQ who thinks it's 150, whatever. I mean, Musk is that guy. So to your point, Musk is exactly the kind of guy who would say, okay, SEC, you know, I'm going to leave the board and I'm going to leave as CEO and, you know, and so I'll give up all my titles, and then I'll hang around and do the exact same shit he's been doing as chief product architect or whatever, you know, whatever he names himself, right?
And so it seems like he is.
By the way, I need to point out again. I mean, look, we're recording this now. It's 5:15 New York time, right? On Thursday. This is total speculation. We could look like total dumb fucks, and maybe they got a new website designer who screwed up. Although, with Kimball leaving Chipotle, it sure doesn't look that way, right?
Right, because that's been confirmed.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Kimball left Chipotle and by the way, is off the roster on the Tesla website for the committees. It's almost like if his brother wasn't going to be there, he wasn't going to be there. And what's hilarious about that is he was allegedly an independent director, I think.
Well, it's all just speculation at this point. I think the real question that we could ask on actual fact is, what the fuck was Kimball Musk doing on anybody's board of directors to begin with?
Obviously,
I mean, the guy is in outer
Elon
fucking
Musk,
space.
Well, obviously, it's obvious. Obviously, Elon Musk needed a stooge who did whatever he wanted him to do, which, by the way, the whole rest of the Tesla board has been that also. This is probably the worst. This is definitely the worst large cap, you know, board in modern history that I've ever seen. I mean, yeah, you know, you look at like a pink sheet, you know, mining company or biotech, and you know, you see all kinds of shit going on, right? But This is the most in plain sight covered company. I mean, you know, people write about it all the time because it gets so many page views, and CNBC is a fucking nonstop commercial for it. You know, the bubble-headed, not all of them, but a lot of them, the bubble-headed anchors on that channel, you know, if a bear comes on, they're like, but, you know, but isn't Elon great? Isn't he? I mean, what's that little dweeb on Sorkin? You know, he's like, Elon's a genius. I just wish he wouldn't tweet so much. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You know, it's like that kind of shit. Or Melissa Lee.
He comes off as a guy.
Mr. Ben Callow, right. You know, who never talks about it. She never gives that disclosure. She comes on and defends the company all the time and probes any bear, you know, not the way she would never probe a bull on the company. It's just a nonsense. Anyway,
to me, Musk comes off, at least from just following his Twitter account, he comes off like a guy that's eager to flex that he knows things. And my example for this is when he was talking about the cold fusion roadster, you know, that he was going to put rocket engines in the back of the new Tesla roadster that was supposedly going to make it hover or whatever. And even most recently, he was talking about SpaceX. And look, to his credit, he just had a couple of wins with SpaceX, right? They launched that fucking Crew Dragon that made it to outer space and then came back home. And so, you know, they'll probably win the contract, I think, from NASA that they're looking for. And it's a good step for them in their goals of, you know, space tourism. So he does have some wins there. At what cost? That's a different story. We could talk about that another time. But the point of the matter is, when he's talking about those things, he seems very eager to show off his vocabulary. And
right, so,
that he,
so
hold
maybe,
on, let me finish this thought.
Yeah, sorry.
He seems eager to show off his vocabulary and kind of show off all of these esoteric sounding terms. And then when you watch somebody like this guy Thunderfoot, who I think is a PhD physicist or something, go and start to debunk what he's saying, it becomes at least clear to me that he is trying to flex like he knows some shit that he doesn't know. And then when you, if that's the case, which I'm not saying it is, but if that is the case,
no, it is the case.
Then you got to turn around and kind of wonder, like, what is the psychological mindset? What type of insecurities does this person have?
Huge.
That would make them feel like they need to go out and prove that they understand these things, even if they don't. But, you know, I don't know. To me, it just seems like, and a perfect example, and I'm going to let you talk, is the Boring Company tunnel, right? He pitched it one way. He said it was going to do one thing. They put up renderings. Everything looked fucking great, whatever. And then we got the demonstration, and you got somebody's bumper car at the county fair just ping-ponging down this fucking tunnel like they're bumper bowling. Right? At 50 miles an hour, when what was supposed to happen? It was supposed to be 90 or 100 miles an hour from here to there in futuristic-looking cars. So what he says and what he pitches and the idea and the vision that he creates is so different from what actually materializes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, look, I mean, yeah, we've talked about this many times, and I think we even talked about – I wish I could remember who wrote it and what the link was, but some guy wrote a blog entry maybe 3 months ago. This guy happened to be an expert, I think, in artificial intelligence and AI. But the whole point of the blog entry, and of course the Thunderfoot guy takes apart the physics of all this shit that Musk does. But this blog guy basically wrote, you know, Musk pretends to know about every different category of whatever, but as soon as any real expert, you know, hears him pontificate about that particular thing, the expert knows has no idea what he's talking about, and he's full of shit, right? So basically, yeah, he throws around buzzwords that impress people who really don't have any knowledge of that branch of science, right? That's what he is. He's a con man. He's a phony. He got beaten up every day and said, when I grow up, I'm going to be really rich. I'm going to show my father I can be successful. I'm going to nail all these actresses. I'm going to have my own jet. I'm going to have all my mansions. I mean, look, the pop psychology of what's going on here is just obvious.
I don't want to go into the psychology of it, but...
Oh, come on. It's obvious.
Well,
it's obvious.
I'm not a fucking psychologist. You know, look, I like to base my opinion on fact and then give my opinion and my analysis on it. I'm not a psychologist. What I can say is that it appears to me that he may have some mental health issues. I don't know. Did you see him at the NASA press conference?
Oh, I saw him. Now, look, I'm no expert in you know, various what people look like under various substances, but a number of people who profess to be said it's pretty obvious that there's something going on there, right? I'm not saying there is, but people did say it. You know, look at the video for yourself and judge it. You know,
yeah, he looks, while having tried substances myself at certain points in my life. And
really?
And, well, you know, the occasional here or there. How do you know if you like something or not, Mark? You know, you gotta find out for yourself, right? But I'm just saying, no, certainly I'm near 100% sober now, with the exception of just alcohol and maybe the occasional, you know, puff here and there. But, but you know, it does.
I'm 100% sober, except for booze and alcohol and marijuana.
Yeah, well, you know, I gotta fucking cut back a little bit. You know,
what were you doing before, like China White and you know?
I never got out of hand, to be honest with you. But you know, certainly, I wanted to experiment and find out.
Is China White even a thing anymore? I mean, my drug lingo is like fucking showing my age.
I've never heard of it. No. Yeah. Didn't run in the circles that I was in, but you know, I was a bartender for a long time too, so you gain certain exposure.
Oh, really? And, you're a bartender? Why don't you fucking run for Congress too then? Maybe they'll put you all over TV and you can talk about how the banks should be held responsible to the actions of the people they lend money to. Why don't you get up there and
that was ridiculous. But listen, just to go back to your point, you know.
By the way, your tweet today was hilarious with her with the Pinterest or whatever. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, with Instagram, I know. We gotta break up Instagram, and then she's like, "Oh shit, my Instagram account doesn't work." You know, like somebody did something.
I know it's a sidetrack, but you know, nobody forces you to use Facebook or Google. They're free in exchange. You know, they sell your data for ads. You don't like it, just don't fucking use them. You don't have to break these companies up. This is not like the old days when you could only get your electricity from one place, right? Or it used to be you could only have one choice for cable TV, and you only had like two oil companies covered each region or whatever, right? That's a different deal. You know, you don't like Facebook, walk away. I never used it.
Yeah,
really.
Shut the fucking thing down, right?
Yeah, I mean, I set up a page for myself years ago, but I never used it. It's not on my phone. It's not on anything. Just don't use it.
Well, and to some degree, that's how I feel about this censorship stuff. I mean, I don't like it at all. And I do think that people on the right are being targeted way, way more than people on the left. Like, I don't know if you watched Joe Rogan had a great podcast recently with Jack Dorsey and with, I think, their general counsel, the woman that was trying to explain why they were banning certain people. And they were going up against, I think the guy's name was Tom Rice, or I can't remember, but the guy just fucking cut them both up and just took them both to task about banning people that had opinions on the right.
Well,
and,
you know, there's an opening
and not banning,
here.
Hold on. And not banning people that had opinions on the left. Now, I don't agree with that. I think that's 100% accurate. And I think if you have a libertarian voice or if you have a Republican voice on certain issues, you are far more susceptible to be banned or suspended from certain social media platforms, regardless of how nice you are when you communicate things. 100%. Because you cannot deny that most of these companies are being run by, you know, people that are traditional liberals. They come out of fucking university or in Silicon Valley. I mean, the mindset is liberal across the board. So in their mind, what they think ideologically good is not objectively what good is, and that thus leads to the bias. But the point I'm trying to make is that, what the fuck is the point I'm trying to make? What am I trying to say? We were just talking about
anyways, here you go.
All right, shut up for a second. Sorry, I mean that in the nicest way possible. Yeah, I know I can say that to you, Mark, because we go back. But the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, to some degree, I also respect the company's decision to be able to do it. I mean, I don't agree with it, but they're a profitable company that makes their own decisions based on their content. So you're saying they're free. People choose to opt into those types of accounts so that, you know, and what do they get? They surrender their data and they surrender. It's like going to school. You know, you don't have a First Amendment right when you go to school. You can't walk into a high school and yell out loud that there's a shooter walking down the hallway, because you surrender your First Amendment right when you're under the governing kind of structure of a private organization.
Right, so that was a very long-winded way of saying that it's their company, and you know, they can ban whom they want. And my answer to that is yes, that's true, and it probably opens up a great opportunity for a more libertarian, and I don't mean libertarian in necessarily in allowing anybody on. I mean, let's call it a more conservative platform. I hate that word conservative, but you know what I'm saying? I mean,
you find me an investor that wants to start libertarian social media platforms that are focused on that are focused on giving people the right to say whatever they would like to say per the Constitution. You find me an investor and I will run that company.
Well, but hold on. Are you going to allow the libtards on your libertarian
version? I'm going to allow everybody. That's the whole point of free speech. You know, you have
that's not an interesting investment. So this country is now in silos.
Yeah,
right?
But you can't start a social media platform in response to these other platforms shutting down speech from conservatives.
What I'm saying is, you know, this country is siloed, right? You've got people who only watch Fox News if they're watching the news, right? You've got people who probably only watch CNBC, right? And then you've got sort of a group of people in the middle who would watch CNN, but they're certainly very left-leaning, at least, you know, relative to the way CNN used to be, right? And Fox News is, I'm sure, incredibly profitable. I think it's the largest, the best-rated news network, probably because CNN and MSNBC, you know, split their audience, right? So the profitable thing to do would be to do a Fox News version of Twitter where you do to the libtards what the, you know, what Twitter does to the libertarians and the conservatives. And you could be the Fox, you know, it would take a while to build, but everyone would go to you and it would just be another silo. I mean, if we're talking about a business model here, not, you know, not like freedom of speech for any idiot who wants to get on there, you know?
Yeah, but I think, if you're going to take a stand for something, look, I'm a libertarian, right? So, and somewhat of a constitutionalist, I kind of consider myself, although I have varying views on many things. But I feel like if you're going to take that stand, you know, take the stand that everybody is entitled to their free speech. As much as I disagree with people that are, you know, neo-Nazis and on the alt-right, and as much as I disagree with people that are on the far left, you know, if you're going to welcome free speech, welcome free speech.
Yeah.
You're going to take a stand in favor of free speech.
But I'm talking about a business here. And
because then, Mark, you have to start to kind of figure out, like, well, what is liberal? You know, like, who exactly do I ban? And how far? Then you have to start monitoring content again as to what's crossing the gray areas of what's liberal, what's conservative.
For better or worse, people like to – and probably actually really for worse, let's face it. People like to spend time in their echo chambers, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the way to make the most money with this thing is make it a freaking echo chamber – which is unserved by Twitter, assuming it's. By the way, I have no idea if Twitter has patented the its format. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what happens if you did a whole thing and called it Twatter? Well, you probably couldn't call it that. But you know what I'm saying, right? And what if you did that and just copied the whole thing, but you know, shadow banned, you know, liberals,
right?
You know, and by the way, again. You know, liberal classically, I think in classical England, a liberal is what we might call today a libertarian or a conservative. But somehow, and I despise the phrase progressive because that implies that anybody who doesn't agree with them is not moving things forward, which is, you know, the way they've co-opted that is just horrendous to me. So I refuse to use that phrase. So anyway, I know we got sidetracked, but it would be an interesting business model to do that.
Yeah, it would. And I think you're right about those traditional definitions versus the way that they are today. And that's a whole other can of worms and a whole other really philosophical debate. I mean, conservatives used to want to conserve things, especially when it came to the economy, right? I mean, if you were conservative, you didn't want to spend. And, you know, today's conservatives are completely different, at least the ones that when they get in power, they change their tune, like Trump.
Well, they give lip service. They give lip service to not spending, except, you know, on the military. But but of course, they do spend.
Spending is spending. Either you're going to run up a deficit or you're not.
Yeah. Well, part of that is so much of the budget is entitlements, and good luck getting elected by saying you're going to, you know, raise the Social Security age. I mean, just the kind of thing that's not going to happen until there's a crisis at the last minute, and then they'll do what they have to do. You know, that's what'll happen.
Yeah, correct. Interesting thing I wanted to ask you about was whether or not you saw Anton Wallman's article a couple of days ago on 12 Tesla questions the SEC should ask Musk.
I did. I know Anton well.
So let me.
The problem is,
hang on. Real quick, I just want to describe the article quickly to. the listeners, and then you can give your take on it. So the article is written from the perspective of if the SEC winds up in some type of evidentiary hearing about the ongoing conflict regarding Musk's tweet, you know, what are some questions that they should ask Musk? I'm not sure if they actually get to depose him or question him or not, but I thought that the questions he put in here, Mark, were excellent. For instance, if you could ask Elon Musk the following: Elon, have you ever tweeted under a different account or username than the one for which you are commonly associated, at Elon Musk? Or
yes, that was a good one, because we all suspect that he's May, you know, sometimes anyway.
Right. Let me just ask two more, and then you can just take as long as you want to respond. Have you ever dictated or collaborated with another account as to what would be tweeted under their account name? This includes your mother's account, May Musk, or anyone you know who has or may reasonably believe to have a position in Tesla stock. Here's another one I like. Have you ever been given access to non-public information about a Twitter account holder from anyone at Twitter, including its CEO, Jack Dorsey, or anyone acting on its behalf? If so, what kind of information about other Twitter users did you receive? In the March 13th Bloomberg article, your security team appears to have had access to private messages from at least one Tesla employee, and they're talking about the whistleblower who claims that he was watching another employee's tweets and emails happening as they were happening. And finally, there's 12 questions here, and I encourage you to read the article, but here's the last one I'm going to read. Have you ever discussed the contents of a future tweet in the context of how it might influence Tesla's stock price with anyone working on your staff or anyone you may reasonably believe is a Tesla shareholder? If so, with whom and regarding which tweet? Okay, Mark Spiegel, go.
Right, no, all I'm going to say is those were great questions, and you covered really the most appropriate ones. I mean, the only issue I had with that thing was, you know, Anton listed a number of questions that had nothing to do with this particular, you know, SEC case about Musk getting tweets pre-approved or not, right? And so it was just – it was a bunch of – it was like a dream list of stuff that you'd love them to ask that they never would. But the ones you just covered, I think, for the most part, exactly should be asked. And, you know, hopefully – if they weren't already planning to ask those, hopefully somebody at the SEC will ask.
Yeah, specifically the first one. Have you ever tweeted under a different account or username than the one for which you are commonly associated?
I would
find that interesting.
Yeah, by the way, I have no doubt that Musk would lie in any of these answers. You know, and he's probably such a sociopath that if you hooked him up to like a lie detector, he'd probably pass it.
You know?
I read somewhere that, like, you know, you do a brain scan on a normal person who's lying, and like, you know, it flares red or whatever on the brain when they're, you know, you know what I'm talking about. But if you do it with a sociopath or a psychopath or whatever, there's no reaction at all. Like, they just do it like it's not a problem. You know?
Well, yeah, and there's people that beat lie detector tests because of that, right? I mean, if you think that you're telling the truth, you can beat a lie detector test.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, look, well, it's one thing to not be a sociopath and train yourself to beat a lie detector. It's another thing to not even need the training.
Right. And that's, you know, I've heard and read stories about that, though. People that, you know, have just been lying so long that they believe themselves and that's it. You know, it's not a lie to them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I assume they're not admissible in court. I mean, when I was, you know, I used to read that they weren't. I assume that hasn't changed, you know.
I don't think that they are still. I mean, I think the trick is you're supposed to, like, pucker up your butthole while you're answering what they call the control questions, which is like, you know, hi, is your name Mark Spiegel? Are you short Tesla? You know, have you ever been intimate with an inanimate object? Things like that, questions that you could easily answer. And, you know, as you're answering those control questions, I think you're supposed to pucker your butt up. I think that's the trick. It creates stress in your body so that the machine reads stress when you're answering your control questions, so that when you go to answer the questions at hand, your deceptive answers appear inconclusive with how you register when they're asking the control questions. I think that's generally how you beat a lie detector test, but I have no clue, and I would guess that's probably why they're not admissible.
And you know, as I said, I doubt Musk would even have to, you know, pucker anything up. He could probably just pass it, you know. But that's – by the way, thank you for that tip in case I ever need to take one of those. I appreciate it. Hopefully I never will need to take it.
So I got – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I got a list of questions here that people submitted to me today. First off, people have been asking for you to come back on like since your last podcast. And I just can't – you know, I just – I'm wary of trying to turn this into the – fucking Mark Spiegel podcast. I love having you on, but on the other hand, you know,
like, you and I should host a we should get like a financial, you know, radio gig that we can host for an hour after the close every day. Wouldn't that be a blast?
Yeah, it would.
Just talk about anything.
Not even
talk about.
I think an hour would do.
What? Yeah, we talk about Boeing. You know, whatever's in the news that day, we could talk about. You know,
what do you think about Boeing?
You know, I think that they'll get this fixed pretty quick. What'd the stock do today, by the way?
I think it was about even today on the day.
It bounced back huge, and some people, of course, accused that of being the buyback yesterday. It was down like, looks like, you know, 1%. Boeing will fix that. Those guys are like the best plane guys in the world. They just fucked up here, right? But that said, I'm not long Boeing because that's a very cyclical industry, and it's the end of a very long cycle, and
right.
And all those thousands of orders can vanish really quickly.
And it's, you know, it's priced for perfection right now, right?
Well, it's pretty expensive. I think you talked about
that's what
that
I mean.
Yesterday, right?
Yeah,
well,
that's what I mean.
I wouldn't say that it's – I mean, look, it's expensive. I mean, you know, it's 2x sales, which is – yeah, it's a lot for Boeing. But, you know, look, I mean, it's – I think the trailing PE is 20 or 21. It's not horrible, but, yeah, it's high for a cyclical company at the top of the cycle. I agree. And I don't believe the forward PE, which is like 16. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I think they're supposed to do something like $23 next year.
Okay.
So you can
might as well
hack 10% off of that at least, right? Just
but look, I mean, in fairness, I mean, I've been cyclically bullish for several years, right? And I would have missed a lot of this run in Boeing. I never had a position in it. So don't listen to me on that, you know. But, you know, all I'm saying is if you are going to be long Boeing here at this price, regardless of whether or not they fix the 737 Max, you know, software issue, you know, you need to be really bullish on the world economy. Because that backlog can disappear really quickly.
Yeah, and it looks like everything is going to turn right now, too. I mean, it looks like the global economy is just spent.
I mean, it looks. I mean, I think this has been a bear market bounce, you know.
And I agree.
I'm not the only person who says it. You know, a lot of people say it, but that doesn't make it wrong either. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm very heavily net short now after getting, by the way, very heavily net long. You know, sort of at the lows of December. I mean, I, you know, on my microcap stuff that I tend to get long. I mean, I was buying while people were just throwing everything out the window, and I was just sitting there scooping it up. And most of that stuff I sold, you know, like maybe 2/3 of the way through January. So yeah, I did miss some of the run, but you know, it worked out well. You know.
Yeah, I want to pivot back to Tesla again because I had another question that I just remembered, and I want to talk to you about the Andrew Left thing. Okay, I want to get your response as to what Mr. Left said last week when he came out and published his report, which I was not impressed with, and wrote on Twitter. I didn't really understand it, and it was, I don't know, to me, I don't know what he's trying to do, but I did try to have you and Andrew on to debate what he had said in his report because I was interested on getting his perspective on it. And he initially had agreed. And of course, you told me right away, the first thing you said was, yeah, I'll do it anytime, any place, just let me know. By the way, I don't think Andrew's going to do it. And I said, well, actually, he agreed that he would do it. And then when I followed up with him to get a date, he said, I'm not going to debate Marsh Spiegel. So give me your thoughts on everything.
Well, let me first say this about Andrew. I've never met Andrew, but we've spoken, you know, a fair number of times, you know, fewer, you know, more than one, but, you know, fewer than 10, you know, over the years about really only about Tesla. I mean, that's how we've sort of found each other. And I think Andrew is a funny guy, you know, I mean, never having met or socialized with him, but just talked to him. He's got a good sense of humor. He's likable. You know, he's like a street smart trader kind of guy who, but that said, on Tesla, having spoken to him, he's really done no good fundamental work on the company. And you know, I don't want to get into more detail than that other than to say that that thing he put out on Friday, by the way, at 3 p.m. on a Friday on an options expiration day, you know, which is not typically what he does. So I don't know. Did the guy buy a – I mean, the stock closed in the 284s Friday, right? There was 15,000 or 16,000 of the 285 – calls traded that day, right? You know, did somebody buy a bunch of them and you know, throw up a Hail Mary? I don't know. I'm not saying that was Andrew at all. I am not saying that. But at any rate, you know, he threw that out at a strange time. But, you know, if you read that, there was clearly no fundamental work there whatsoever. It was basically, you know, Elon Musk is God. He lands rockets and, you know, he raised $500 million in China. And what did you do this week? It was nonsensical. And then, of course, you know, he posted that picture. He talked about the new Model S as being a catalyst for the stock. And, yeah, supposedly the company's been talking up the fact that they're going to switch the Model S and X battery pack over to the Model 3 batteries, which it's not a major difference. I think it allows faster charging, you know, than the current batteries on those cars. And, you know, maybe there's slightly more energy density, but, you know, it's not a huge difference. It's not like the Model 3 goes 400 miles, you know. But as part of that, he puts this picture on his flyer, on his whatever you want to call it, and you know, like it's like that was going to be the next Model S. And I was going to bed Friday night; it was probably midnight, and just something stuck in my head, like this doesn't feel right. So I cut and pasted it into Google Image Search, and sure enough, instantly it comes up that some Tesla fanboy, who's actually a very good artist, by the way, not to take anything away from him, some Tesla fanboy in Istanbul had, you know, put together a whole thing online about what he thinks the next Model S should look like. And, you know, had a lot of nonsense. It'll have level 5 autonomous driving, which is fucking impossible, probably for at least 10 years and all that. Anyway, and left just found that and stuck that on his thing without giving the guy any credit for it. And, you know, he was hoping people would think that's the next Model S. It wouldn't work anyway, probably. My guess is from an aerodynamic standpoint, like the tires were too wide and there was too much stuff sticking out. But at any rate, so bottom line is I think he did no fundamental work here. I think he threw up a Hail Mary, hoping the stock would have a run going into this Model Y unveiling tonight. You know, the same way he called it going into the Q3 earnings report, you know. Stock was in whatever, the 260s or 70s, and he said this thing's going to have a run. Now, in the thing he put into the Q3 earnings report, you know, he put through a fundamental analysis, which he took from another guy. It was a buy-side guy who had put that out. It was circulating before he put it out. And Andrew said, you know, his worst-case target was $5.99 a share.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right? But he dumped the stock right after the earnings report. He dumped it somewhere in, like, the lower mid threes, let's call it. I mean, he's admitted that, right?
Did he? I was just going to ask if he knew that.
Yeah, well, he told somebody on Twitter that he had sold all the stock back in the fall or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it was obvious he was going to ride the earnings report. And so, in fact, even in the from memory, I'm thinking, even in a thing he said, you know, this is a great buy at least through the earnings report or something like that. It was clear what he was doing. So, you know, you don't put out a $5.99 target price and blow out the position at 315 or 320 or 325. That's just not done. I mean, you do it, you know, reputationally, I guess, you know, you're going to hurt your own reputation if you do that stuff, right? I mean, you know, I own stocks and I'm like, okay, I bought this at $2 and I think it's worth $450. Yeah, when the stock is up, you know, I'm making up numbers here, but if the stock is up 30% from there, I'll take off a third, let's say, right?
Right.
And if it's up 50% from there, I'll take off half. I don't blow it all out on the first at $250 if I say it's worth $4. You know, that's just I don't think there's anything illegal about it, but you do that a few times and your reputation is shit and people just laugh at you after a while.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it was certainly interesting. I didn't really know what to think of it, and I was hoping that he would come on and that you guys would debate it together, but
I knew he wouldn't come on because I knew based on that he had no concept of fundamentally what's going on at the company. I mean, it was the equivalent of he lands rockets on barges, therefore this is a great company.
Right, right. Interesting. I want to – I have a couple of questions here that some of my patrons submitted. Do you mind if I ask you before we head out? All right, cool.
Yeah.
So the first one is Bottles and Models Capital wants to know what your Q1, Q2 estimates are for production and delivery. And what do you think about the cash balance? What do you think – it is versus what they say it is, and have you looked at, you know, the amount of interest that they're generating off of their cash balance versus what they claim it is, things like that.
Is Bottles and Models charging me a cover charge to answer that question?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Look, I mean, I'm actually lower than, forget lower than what the consensus was, but I'm low versus even other bears, and I could be wrong. I could be too low. I mean, you know, so like my ballpark guess on Model 3 deliveries has been like you know, like maybe like 22,000 in North America and 15 in Europe and 3 in China. So, you know, so that's like 22, 30. So call it like 40,000 Model 3s and you know, 18,000 S and X. Other people who whom I respect are saying Model 3s will be more like, you know, 45,000, you know, which is possible. You know, they have a way of delivering, whether really delivered or not. You know, they have this financially delivered metric where now they didn't used to, where as long as they have the money, they claim the car is delivered, whether it physically is or not. Anyway, so I could be a little off, but that's hugely less than, you know, than what the original guidance was. Originally, they were supposed to deliver ballpark 55,000 Model 3s.
Right.
And you know, somewhere around 20,000, you know, something like that, S and X, right? Originally, I think the consensus actually was 80,000 total deliveries originally. And here I'm saying, you know, 58,000. So maybe, is it going to be 63,000? Maybe. It's a huge miss. You know, gap-wise, I mean, on a gap basis, I would say they lose at least around 300 million in Q1. And they could lose more than that. You know, it depends. That's 300 million without any extraordinary restructuring. That's without like kitchen sinking the quarter. That's just like 300 based on delivering, you know, the number of cars I just said, which would be, you know, 58,000 total cars, right?
Right.
It could be 100 or 200 more than that. I don't know. You know, Q2 is going to be worse than Q1. I mean, because they've blown through the European backlog by the end of Q1, and all they can do then is start selling the no margin and even maybe the money losing cars in Europe and of course in the U.S. in Q2. I mean, the $35,000 Model 3 has to lose on an EBIT basis, you know, gap basis, at least $3,000 a car, you know, and it's not 37 anymore, right? They're raising the price 3%. So call it the $38,000 model. That one also that probably loses $2,000 because it's got a bigger battery than the cheaper one and a little better equipped on an EBIT basis. So it's going to be profitless and probably money losing volume on those cheaper cars. So this company is screwed. I mean, they're going to have a gap loss for 2018. My guess is, I'm sorry, for 2019. They could lose $1.5 billion gap this year, you know, at least $1 billion, and a really good chance it's $1.5 billion gap. If they're even in business at the end of this year without a restructure. No, I mean, you know, look, I'm not one of these guys, I mean, who said that they're going bankrupt tomorrow. I mean, I joke around with the queue just because I think it's funny. But, I mean, it's not funny to the employees, but it's funny to the Tesla bulls who just do no, you know, no financial homework on this. I mean, look, this is a busted growth story. It can either be, you know, a slow collapse or it could be a fast collapse, but I just know where it's going. And, you know, I mean, in theory, we talked about this many times and I don't want to beat it to death again, but in theory, a company, you know, with a $300 stock trading 7 million shares a day should be able to do a quick deal for $1.5 billion or 2 billion right. cash if the discount is good enough.
Right.
You know, I mean, any hedge for hell, you sell it to me for 20% down, I might do the deal, you know? So the fact that they haven't, the big question is why haven't they? And we don't know why. Maybe Musk just has chosen not to because he's hoping he could avoid it, or maybe they can't. We don't know. But so they can do that and keep the lights on, but it's just a busted growth story. And at some point, you know, this stock has been driven by top line momentum, not stock price action momentum necessarily, which hasn't really been there, right? It's sort of round tripped in 4 years, but it's as long as that it's the buyers who say, as long as that top line keeps growing, you know, I'm going to own this thing, right? Well, that top line is no longer growing, and they have to come to the realization that it's not going to be growing in Q2 or right. Q3 or right. And that's it.
Interesting. Okay, so here's the next question. That one's kind of nebulous. That one you answered already. We'll go off the Tesla kind of trail for a second. Vince wants to know if you're looking at Uber ahead of the IPO as a short.
Oh, look, I mean, Uber's a financial joke, right? Everybody knows that, you know, but you know, I don't short IPOs. I mean, you never know where they're going to go. It's hard to get borrowed. Borrow could be expensive. You know, let it settle in a little bit and right. Let's see where it is. I mean, it's very funny. There's a great article from do you ever read Matt Levine's daily email blast?
Occasionally I do, yeah.
Oh, he's the greatest. You should subscribe to that. He's smart. He's funny. And he talked about, you know, how SoftBank keeps putting money into Uber at increasingly higher rounds so it could mark up its giant current position. And the latest was supposedly putting in a billion or some part of a billion on the autonomous driving part of Uber, right? Now they can claim that, you know, the post-money valuation is that many billions higher on their position, right? So, but obviously Uber is not a financially viable company. I mean, that's obvious, nor is Lyft apparently either. Now, by the way, if they ever – and by the way, this is why they desperately want to do it. If they ever get fully autonomous, they'll probably be very financially viable because you won't have to pay the driver.
But right.
There's so many years away. I mean, that's why they're desperately trying to get
you
there.
You get rid of the
so
insurance costs. Right. You get rid of all these it's the insurance, right? That's the biggest cost for them?
I don't know. I mean, the driver's a big cost. I mean, the driver takes a huge chunk of the fare. If you have a $30 fare – doesn't the driver get like half of it or something?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, that's your biggest cost.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you for that. Next question comes from Mark Woolard, who asks, if the demand is not falling off a cliff and Tesla can in fact sell 3,000 to 5,000 cars per week, which appears to be their maximum production, what does this do to the growth story narrative that you have, and where does it drive the stock? If they can do 3,000 to 5,000 cars a week.
Well, by the way, you know, they can certainly do that worldwide. I mean, between the U.S., Europe, and China, they could probably sell, you know, 5,000 Model 3s a week, combined, right? I mean, in terms of, Model 3, and then if there's ever a Model Y, even just a Model 3, they may be able to sell, you know, 5,000 a week worldwide, probably fewer than that. But, I mean, that's no growth story. I mean, how many are they supposed to be doing, right? They're supposed to be selling 400,000 this year, or some 350 on the Model 3, some
yeah,
crazy
I think that's
number.
Like right.
500,000, and then and Musk on the conference call said he's convinced that ultimate demand for the Model 3, I'm pretty sure he said like is 700,000 to a million or some bullshit like that. I mean, this is no fucking way. I mean, they'll never do what's built into this stock price.
All right, so moving on, Jesse Stroik wants to know. In 2018, I believe their stock-based compensation approximated $750 million. I believe this shows up as a cost on the balance sheet, but it doesn't affect cash. Is this accurate? And if so, can they push these numbers higher to reduce payroll costs and keep cash levels up irrespective of paper losses?
So can they push up stock-based comp from where it is to conserve cash? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. He says,
it's very hard to do that if your stock isn't going up. Now, I guess you could pay people in just unrestricted or maybe restricted shares as opposed to options. I suppose you could, but you know that's got to be factored into the company valuation. So yeah, I guess they can keep the lights on, but you know then the market cap or the EV of the company continues to soar, which it is already with the amount of stock being issued.
Yeah, I always found the stock as compensation as an interesting kind of prisoner's dilemma that could lead to a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You know, if people are getting paid a majority of their pay in stock and the stock starts to move lower, well, isn't that going to encourage people to...
They leave. I mean, if they're looking around, I mean, if you're working for a jerk like Musk and the stock is going down, so your options are worthless, that's one fewer golden handcuff, you know, to keep you... It's actually funny, right? They bought those trucks from that company, you know, $13 million worth or 15, it's unclear, you know, where the stock was when they negotiated the deal. You know what I'm talking about, right? Earlier this week. And, you know, I mean, how many $50 billion enterprise value companies or $60 billion, you know, don't do a $15 million acquisition with cash? I mean, they actually use stock for that. And is it because they didn't have the cash? Did they owe the guy money? So they're like, all right, we'll give you stock and we'll take your trucks. You know, or did they just want to own the trucks, but they didn't have the cash, so they bought them with stock? I don't know. I mean, clearly it wasn't bullish for the stock that the company was ready to pay stock instead of cash for those trucks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing to me is always with all these executive departures, I mean, this isn't exactly related to what we're talking about, but I've always said on this podcast, you know, why would somebody leave if they thought the stock was going to appreciate?
Of course.
Especially if they were one of these people that had a runway of equity awards, right? You know, ostensibly, if this company is going to be what everybody thinks it's going to be, and it's going to be some trillion-dollar entity, and things are going swimmingly, and you have all these equity awards, why leave?
I'll give you the bull case. The bull case for why all these people are leaving, even if they thought this would be a trillion-dollar company. The bull case is Musk is such an asshole to work for that it's not worth it. I'm willing to leave all that money on the table. That's the most bullish thing you come – and, of course – I'm being, you know, a bit of a wise guy there because good luck recruiting new good people.
Right.
You know, no matter what the options are, if you're working for a jerk. And of course, what's going on now is all the promotions seem to be from within. Like they can't get new people into the company.
Right.
You know, or they don't want to either way. So, by the way, the Tesla stock has now recovered after hours.
I see that. Yeah. It's
about 50 cents a share higher than the close. So I wonder if the – I don't see anything on Twitter but or on the headline, obviously, Dow Jones or Reuters. But I wonder if the company has said, oh, that's just a
mistake. I don't think they did. It's just kind of poked back up here while we've been doing the podcast. It didn't shoot back up. It's just kind of leveled off here a little bit. It doesn't look like it's –
Well, it's leveled off at a higher level. I mean, there were guys, including me. I mean, I put on a few hundred more shares short, you know, near the close in the 289s. And then it went down. I saw it as a bit as low as the 286 and 285.
I've been trying to monitor the Tesla Twitter feed while we've been talking, and it just looks as though people have acknowledged the fact that he's not off that main page. He's just off the committee page. And by the way,
that other guy is off the committee page too. That Jurvetson.
Right.
Yeah.
So a couple people like Aaron Greenspan at Plain Sights come out and just said, "Hey, you know." Another scenario could be that he just got removed from his committees or something. Well, look, it's not even worth speculating about because we're going to know the answer relatively soon. So it's not even worth kind of speculating about. All right, let me ask you another question here. This is from my brother TJ Brown, or sister. He or she says, I think Tesla Q investors like Mark need to do a better job of stating all allegations against Tesla, okay, which obviously you're doing. We don't have time for that. Timeline for events related to these accusations, offering any supporting evidence in an easy, fine, concise way.
Go find your own evidence.
Right,
pal.
Yeah. Follow
all these guys. Look at who I follow on Twitter, you know. Other than a handful of non-Tesla stuff, you know, or non-financial stuff. It's a lot of Twitter people. Just follow all those people. Right. Read through the timelines. I mean, there's new evidence every day.
TJ, you know? My friend.
It doesn't matter. The people who are long this stock, here's what I finally learned, and this has gotten more relaxed about things. The people long this stock are impervious to facts. Look at Ron Barron on TV this morning, who I couldn't stomach to watch, but I read all about it on Twitter, of course. The guy gets on TV. This is a guy running billions of dollars. He's been in the business for 50 years or whatever. And he gets on TV and says they sell every car they can make. I mean, how many pictures of inventory? Tesla itself said that it keeps inventory at stores now, right? How much more impervious to facts can you be than Ron Barron on TV this morning, right? So, like, why even waste time with these people anymore? You know, it's like, do you argue with religion? You know, I don't know what your religion is, if you even have one. But, you know, if you're Protestant, do you tell a Catholic, you nuts? No, it's like, why waste time with that? It's a ridiculous waste of time, right? So that's where I am now on trying to convince, you know, Tesla people of facts. At this point, you're on your own, pal. You'll see what happens with this.
And that's what Montana Skeptic always says. He calls it religion. He says, you know, it's a faith-based investment, right?
Yeah, it's a faith-based investment from people who should know better. It's one thing if you're if you're a retail investor and you know, you don't know about this and you buy two shares on Robinhood.
Right.
But, you know, come on, you're running a mutual fund and you have a half a billion dollar position or a multi-billion dollar position. I mean, if those guys are impervious to facts, I give up.
Have you seen the website? Let it play out. Have you seen the website? It's like RobinhoodTracker.com or something, but it shows the amount of people that have been adding Tesla to their Robinhood accounts. It aggregates who holds.
It's funny. Somebody sent that to me, yesterday, the day before. I had heard about it, but I had never seen it. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you can see that people have been adding. You know, look, I feel like when we're sitting here watching the stock price, I feel like that Zach and Jesse, you know, talking about, oh, it's the oil companies. Oh, you know, these are just some big shorts making big phone calls. I'm like, oh my God. You know, like, and to some degree, I sympathize with those two. because they don't know what they're doing, you know, and I was at that spot at one point too, where I just didn't understand how it worked. I didn't understand how the capital markets worked. I thought simply that short sellers were evil people that wanted businesses to fail, and that, you know, being a short seller and having good intentions or being a moral person were mutually exclusive, you know? I thought that if you were a short seller, you were just evil, you know? And then I start to realize, oh, okay, well, these are just people that are betting that a certain part of a company's capital structure is going to wind up moving lower than it is now, or that it may be overpriced. And
yeah, I mean, look, you know, some short sellers will say, oh, you know, which is true, by the way. You know, we provide, and again, you know, I've said this many times, I make most of my money on the long side, just to be clear, but
right.
Say, oh, we provide a very a useful function for the capital markets, you know, to help companies find their true value, whatever. But in reality, all I'm doing, and you, I guess you're short Tesla, all you're doing here is we're placing a side bet.
Right.
You know, if you're long this company and you think that we're full of shit and that there isn't a demand problem and that Musk isn't a crook and whatever, what are you getting so worked up about? Just keep your long position. Obviously, they're worked up because they're worried. Because on some level, they're like, oh, what if those guys are right?
They don't fucking know. The problem, Mark, is that they think that people shorting the stock are what drive it lower on days that it moves lower. Okay, so I just wrote an article. It's called Tesla Shareholders Need to Separate the Ideology from the Investment.
Yeah, I saw that.
You can read it on Seeking Alpha, right? But it lays out a lot of in-depth what I'm going to say right now, which is that people that are long this stock that don't have an understanding of how the capital markets work, they think that short sellers drive down the price of a stock. So, case in point, when you get these two guys that are, look, they're trying to do a good thing, right? It's a father-son team, all right? They're trying to do a podcast together. It's, you know, they look like they have a great relationship with one another, and I'm very happy for them as human beings and as, you know, brothers of mine on planet Earth. However, when it comes to the investment, they have no fucking idea what they're talking about. They're conflating the idea of Elon Musk creating a green future with the investment, which is how is a portion of this publicly traded company being valued on a public market? Overvalued or undervalued, right? And for the most part, every investment is going to be either overvalued or undervalued if it trades on a public exchange. Very rarely, except in the case of, you know, you're working in arbitrage or something like that, is something going to be valued exactly what it should be valued at, right? So these guys don't understand that. They don't understand what the public market is. They don't understand what the privilege is of being a public company, that it allows somebody like Elon to go out and tap into what is essentially an infinite pool of liquidity. They don't understand the benefits that being a public company provides to insiders, guys like Elon, who have built a $22 billion net worth based on the fact that this company is public.
Well, that's not a real worth, by the way. That's a paper worth.
Well, it doesn't matter. That's what gets reported on. And you know what? When he pledges those fucking shares for loans, Mark, it is a real net worth.
You can't borrow $22 billion against it.
Well, he's not going to borrow $22 billion, but whatever the ratio is that he could borrow against the $22 billion is going to change as the stock price changes, right? Just like he's going to get a margin call if the stock price goes down. So these guys can't see that side of the argument. And to them, the problem here is they truly believe when you watch that fucking guy say, this is some short, so I'm making huge phone calls, and then the kid, equally as uninformed, is like, this is just the big oil company's last chance to go in and short the stock, and like, it's just asinine. But the problem is that they don't understand what they're talking about. Like, again, Mark, I kind of almost, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, good, because I'm going to keep going for a second, so hang tight. The problem is that, like, they don't get it, and I've been at that point where before I understood how equity valuations work, before I understand how the capital markets work, there is this little pocket in your understanding for some people where you just kind of assume that it's like the guy that asked me the question that prompted me to write the article said, well, why do you want Elon Musk to fail so badly? Like, would the earth be a worse place if Tesla was successful? And the answer is no. Like, I'm not, this doesn't mean I'm against the EV, you know, the burgeoning EV market. It doesn't mean that I'm against alternative energy. It doesn't mean that I'm against clean energy. When you sell a stock short, or when you sell a bond short, or when you buy an option that will profit, that will appreciate in value from any instrument moving lower, all you're betting is that a certain part of a company's capital structure, whatever it is, or a commodity or whatever it is that you're looking at, is going to move lower. That's it. It's not a commentary on fucking Elon Musk. I mean, although to some degree it is, because I think he's nuts and I think that helps the short case.
Well, look, a much simpler way to say it, I know you're going off on this whole thing, but
yeah, sorry.
It's just a side bet. You know, if the Giants are playing the Steelers this weekend and, you know, you bet on the Giants, the Steelers fan shouldn't be pissed at you. You're not going to cause the Steelers to lose. You're just betting that the Steelers lose, and you're not going to have any influence on the game. I mean, look, if it's a small company, I guess shorts can – if you know, if shorts spread actual lies, which we don't, we talk about fact-based things, I suppose you could drive down the stock of a small company, and therefore it could be harder for it to access capital or whatever. But, you know, Tesla's a huge company. We're placing side bets. Yeah, we're bringing to light things like inventory – and, you know, repair issues and all that stuff. But look, any long should consider that a service. But of course, they don't,
right?
Because, you know, it puts doubts into their own belief in the company. But it's a side bet.
If you're a long investor in a company, once you kind of open up your perspective on how the capital markets work a little bit, if you're a long investor, you should welcome short sellers, right? Because
obviously it gives you a chance to buy more stock at a lower price, or you know, it can tell you stuff that you should want to know.
Exactly.
About the company.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're long a company, I want to know what a short seller's best fucking argument is. You show me the best that you've got. Bring the best argument you've got against this company. And if I don't have an answer for it, then maybe I should reconsider why I'm long. But if I do, then you just have more information on the table, right? And if you have a thesis in either direction, shouldn't you want to just welcome as many facts as possible?
Look, it belies a certain insecurity on the part of the other side of your position. That's what it is.
Right. And I think in this case, it's a misunderstanding. So I mean, not a misunderstanding, but I think they just don't know. I think they just don't have an idea. Anyways, all right, here's my last question for you. Then I'm going to let you slide because I know you got shit to do, and I appreciate you staying on here for a little while. This is just from David, and I just want to go back and say to TJ Brown, thank you for the question and thank you for being a patron. I'm sorry we didn't have time to answer it, but it was a little vague, so you just gotta cut us some slack on that one. This is the last question. It's from David. He says that I'm short big, but I continue to get feedback from wealthy friends and friends and friends of how they've never had a car like it and how much they love it. The masses are oblivious to the autopilot danger and quality issues. How do we increase awareness, Mark, of these risks to consumers and shareholders?
Well, we've got two issues there, okay? And one issue, we've talked about this. I've talked about this many times. I probably talked about it on your show, is people mistake electric drivetrain love for Tesla love. And they're like, this car is so unique, and I love it, and I would never go back to a gasoline car. Well, go drive the Jaguar I-Pace. You know, go drive the new Audi e-tron, which is in showrooms next month. Go drive the Mercedes EQC, right, you know, in January, and the Porsche Taycan in January, and you'll find that it has everything you love about your Tesla and none of the shit you hate, like the cheap subpar interior and the reliability issues and the fact that you can't get a service appointment, et cetera, right? So, so that's really that's the biggest point there. And there was a second part though to what he said. Oh yeah,
he wants
autopilot.
To know how to get to the masses that autopilot might be dangerous.
Well, enough. You know, people keep getting killed with it. Guy drove under a truck the other day. Of course, you know, one of the most horrible things that Musk does as the horrible person that he is, you know, with a wink and a nod, he says, oh yeah, this is driver assistance. You know, you should stay alert and keep your hands on the wheel. And then he goes on 60 Minutes a few months ago and drives hands-free.
Right.
And says, yeah, it's driving itself.
Right.
I mean, that's just a total move of scumbaggery. And, you know, it's dangerous, and he doesn't give a fuck. That's why I say he's a sociopath. He doesn't care about the lives of his customers. So, you know, listen, if someone's dumb enough to drive that thing – and by the way, that's why I think it's worthless, by the way, because – If it allows you to relax, it means you're giving up alertness, and then you're going to be a step behind when you need to step in and save your car.
Right.
And that's why you're better off not having it at all.
And he said, I don't know if it was at the Model 3 reveal or at another event, but several years ago, he stood on that stage and said, you know, we're not far off from letting you sleep, letting you watch a movie, you know, while you're driving. And that is that is at odds with...
He's done all kinds of stuff. He's promised a full self-driving across the country, you know, many times, never made the deadline. I think they still have on the website that video they did of to the Rolling Stones Painted Black, where at the beginning they go, you know, no one touched the wheel or something. Just don't quote me on this. You know, there's only a driver in the car for safety reasons or whatever. And they purport to show this car, you know, completely driving itself around town in California for I don't remember how long it is. I saw it a few years ago, 7 minutes or 10, whatever. But, you know, I think it was Ed Niedermeyer put together a whole thing that proving that they just spliced together a bunch of different segments.
Right.
Or in the best possible case, you know, they filmed it a shitload of times before they got one time when it worked and the car was able to do it, right? So it's like
the battery swap. It's like the solar roof tiles.
It's just another scam, and Musk is a wise guy, and he's like, oh, I'm smarter than these guys. I can get away with this shit. And, you know, eventually everyone, even the dumbest of the dumb, catch on to him eventually. We're not there yet, but... You know, people with my level of dumbness have caught on, and so are other people.
Well, you're lucky I'm not in New York. Otherwise, I would have already gone to the liquor store and purchased a handle of whiskey to bring over to your place tonight. We'd be watching the Model Y unveil together.
You know what? My plan now, I don't know if I'm going to make it because shit always takes longer than I think it will. But my plan now is to roughly go to sleep around a little after 11. And therefore, I'm not going to stay up for him. And I'll probably wind up missing it. And he always starts late anyway. He's got to sober up for the presentation. So
all speculative.
Come down off his cloud or whatever. I'm not an expert on that. You're an expert, but whatever he has to do.
I got a new patron today that says I'm going to donate every time Mark Spiegel comes on. So only because only because of that, you might wind up coming back on the podcast sooner rather than later if it's okay with you.
Well, you know, it's not because I like you at all. No, look, I appreciate that. I mean, this is – look, this has been – up to now, for sure, the short position has cost me money just because I've traded it terribly. I got whipsawed too many times. I mean, the stock hasn't moved that much in 4 years, but right. I've gotten creamed on it. But I've met a lot of great people through this, and it's been a lot of fun. And look, as Lef said, I'm just some schnook that nobody heard of before this. I just got very passionately vocal about it, and just what seems obvious to me for 4 years, people are finally catching on to. So, you know, hopefully I'll have something to say when it's all over, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Like, if you've made your way into one of his reports and you've drawn the ire of him, I think that to some
degree...
Well,
he was very nice to me, but, you know...
Yeah, but his point that Jim Chanos and David Einhorn and Mark Spiegel and the people that, you know, are critical of the company have lost money mark to market or whatever it is, and that's why they shouldn't be taken seriously. I mean, that's not an investment thesis, right?
Well, yeah, look, so, you know, I'm like Donald Trump here. If you stroke my ego, I'm going to be nice to you. And and, you know, he was like, yeah, he's mocking Chanos, who's obviously brilliant, and Einhorn, who's brilliant, and you know, they're both sort of investing heroes of mine, and Whitney Tilson, who is a very nice guy. I mean, I don't know him socially, but business-wise, I know him, and we talk in email, and he's a very nice guy. I don't have a bad word to say about him. And he mocked all those guys, and then he goes, and Mark Spiegel, who's a smart and nice man, only manages $10 million, and nobody heard of him, or he said around $10 million, and nobody heard of him, you know, before this whole thing. And look, that's 100% true about no one heard of me, and you know, it's less than $10 million. I'm in the eights, you know, typically. But you know, the fact that he said I'm a smart, nice man, I'm not going to badmouth the guy. And you know, he is a street smart guy. I mean, he is. I know what he is. I'm just saying he did no homework. No, he did no real homework on Tesla. That's all I'm saying. You know, and I don't know that he could even deny that.
Well, and everybody that has some semblance of investing sophistication knows that the amount of capital that you manage, you know, has nothing to do with your investment thesis is on anything. So that's a logical fallacy among several logical fallacies that I thought he put in this article. But look, we're going to have more details soon. Somebody's going to be right. Somebody's going to be wrong. It's all going to play out. Will you do me a favor, though? Will you please come back on the podcast relatively soon, maybe a week or two or three?
I'll come on whenever you want, because it's a lot of fun for me. And, you know, as I said, you know, we should, you know, find a gig, and you can be the host, and I'll be like your Robin Quivers. You know, I'll be the white male thin Robin Quivers, and we can do like a stick together.
All right. Know? I'd be down for that. Hey, look, if somebody comes calling one of these days, Mark, we both know the answer is yes. Now it's on.
I mean, if you think, right, you know, if you think Tesla has a niche audience, the niche audience for us would be like, you know, 3 hours of Model 3 sales. That would be the size of our audience. But I would still do it. It would be fun. So.
I would too, brother. Well, listen, man, I want to thank you so much for coming on and for taking all those questions from my listeners who love hearing from you. And certainly, man, I could talk to you forever. I enjoy shooting the shit with you, and look forward to catching up and having a beer sometime soon. But for now, I'll let you go.
Yep, next time we're in New York. Take care.
Thanks, all right, Mark. Man. Take care, buddy.
Okay, bye.
That was the one, the only Mark Spiegel of Stanfield Capital. Man, Mark's never got a shortage of shit to say. For now, I am going to get out of here. You know why, folks? Because believe it or not, don't really have a life, but occasionally one or two things pop up that I have to do, and I want to get those done tonight so I can give all my attention to Elon and the coveted Model Y reveal. Folks, I am the fuck out of here. Peace!